want to talk with you this morning about our relationship with our kids. How we interact with our children will really determine what our kids turn out to be, quite frankly. And if you were here for last week, let me just preface today by telling you this. Unless you do what we talk about this morning, unless you grasp this, do something with it, you might as well throw last week out, because it won't work. Discipline outside of the environment I talk about today is very destructive. Discipline within the parameters in the environment that I discuss today will work very, very effectively. And if you don't understand that, you come to my parenting class on Monday night starting November 1st, well, the first Monday of November, I think it's the second, right here in the auditorium from 7 to 8. There won't be child care provided. You'll have to get your own. But I'd like to encourage you to check it out. We'll take questions. We'll answer specific things. Maybe there's things you didn't quite understand, and we'll be able to get to those. But this morning is crucial to working with your family. Unless we create an environment in our homes where children grow, the opposite will happen. They won't grow. They won't thrive. In fact, they won't want to be around your family very much. And we have to take this responsibility on, moms and dads. We have to be honest about this. Let me share with you a little analogy. There may be many of us here who wish we could give our children a wonderful home, an acreage. If I had my druthers, if I had my dream, if I didn't have... And don't take this personal if you have one of these, okay? I think it's fine. But if I was going to do in life what I wanted to do, I'd own a ranch with lots of horses. And that's where I live my life. And I wouldn't come off my ranch. And I'd raise my family there. And we go out in the fields anytime we want. And I can just see it with that picturesque stream and that brook and our own little lake on our own property. I mean, that's what I'd go after if I didn't have better things to do. If I didn't feel there were more important things to do in life. I don't know that I'll ever be able to give my children that. My children, I don't know that they'll ever have their own room. I don't. So I don't know if I'll ever be able to do that either with six of us in the family. I don't know that I'll ever be able to afford that. But I'll tell you this. I'm planning on giving them a $1 billion home. Not a $1 billion house, but a $1 billion home. You understand my meaning? There's a big difference between the house you live in and the environment you create in a home. And that's what I want to talk about today, because that you and I do have control over. We can do something about that. We can do something proactive, something positive, something well thought through, and we can create an environment in our home where our children will thrive and grow. It's just like a farmer. Listen. A farmer may have 5,000 acres of land. He's either a successful farmer or a bad farmer, depending on what he does with his land. Now, there are certain elements he can't control, like the sun and the rain, unless God works with him and everything else, and everything works out great, his crop won't come in. But I'll tell you this, every farmer knows that unless he gets on his tractor, plows up his field, cultivates his ground, and prepares it for the seed, the crop will not grow. Any farmer can go out and just throw lots of corn on grassland. And guess what? It's not going to grow. He must create the appropriate environment in the soil and with the soil so the seeds will grow. Same is true with parenting. I want to read to you this morning. I was going to get the song, but I just didn't have time to get the tape done. But there's a song on the radio. Every time I've heard it, it just sort of brings tears to my eyes. If I had the music with it, it probably would yours too. It's a very powerful song. It's entitled The Greatest Man I Never Knew. It's by Reba McEntire. Here's the words. The greatest man I never knew lived just down the hall. And every day we said hello, but never touched at all. He was in his paper, I was in my room. How was I to know? He thought I hung the moon. The greatest man I never knew came home late every night. He never had too much to say. Too much was on his mind. I never really knew him. And now it seems so sad. Everything he gave to us, took all he had. Then the days turned into years and the memories to black and white. He grew old like an old winter cold blowing across my life. The greatest words I never heard, I guess I'll never hear. The man I thought would never die has been dead almost a year. He was good at business, but there was business left to do. He never said he loved me. I guess he thought I knew. This little song, in my mind, there's no doubt it'll be a number one song in the country, just like Living Years was a few years ago by Mike and the Mechanics, because it touches the raw nerve in the human heart. So many people have had this experience growing up. Maybe with the father, maybe with the mother. They never knew them. They were too busy. Too many things going on. They had to get that house. They had to get that whatever. And their life was hurry-scurry from one thing to the next. The child had their world. The adult had their world. And they never crossed except in the hall when they both wanted to use the bathroom at the same time. One was too busy, as it says in the paper, or doing their hobby or whatever it is, to have time for that child. I know I have talked to young people who told me, I never heard my parents say, I love you. I never heard the words come out of my father's mouth. I never heard them come out of my mother's mouth. And then one day it's too late and they're gone and you never do hear them. I'd like to change that. I wished I could take this message to the entire world today. I wish, like Ross Perot, I could buy my own 30 minutes on television. And I would if I could, with my own money. And I'd just take this whole message to the entire United States. We've got to stop living our own lives, and we've got to start creating billion-dollar families. I've said this before, I'll say it again. Wealth is not the problem in this country. The economy is not the problem in this country. Politics is not the problem in this country. The problem in this country is the family. The problem in this country is the lack of a godly environment in our homes today. You see, that is the bed, the ground, the soil in which all American citizens are grown. We're raising a lot of weeds today. And we can change that. Now, I want to share with you an introduction to that. I'm going to share with you seven things today. Seven things you can do to create an environment in your home your kids will thrive in. But first of all, you need to understand this. One statement sums up everything I think about parenting, everything I learn about parenting. I try to mimic and imitate everything I do in parenting and life according to God. Whatever God says He does, I try to do. Whatever God is, I try to imitate. Say, Mark, where do you get that? Ephesians 5, verse 1, it's in the New Testament, says this, therefore, be imitators of God as dearly loved children and live a life of love just like Christ also loved you. The most important question you need to answer today is, what is your image of God? It will tell me an awful lot about you. It will tell you an awful lot about yourself. What do you think when you think of God? Most people have an erroneous view of God. God is the most wonderful being there is in all the universe. He's perfect, He's good, He's loving, He's just, He's fair, He's merciful, He overflows with grace, and He cares about every single person. He cares about you, every single one of you. He wants to get involved in your life. Why, to ruin it? No. To regulate it and rule it? No. To save it. So that you can experience real liberty and freedom and the abundance that God intended to bring to every person's life. He cannot force Himself on any person. We must allow Him into our life, but when we do, you will experience the most extraordinary freedom and joy that you have in your life as you grow in your relationship with Him. But there's so many misconceptions about God. So I've decided a long time ago as I was reading my Bible as a young man that when I become a father, I want to imitate my Heavenly Father. He is my mentor. If you had no other mentor in your whole life, whether you had a good family or a bad one, if you had no other, if you just read the Scriptures and understood Jesus, you would understand how to parent. Jesus was loving, He was kind, He was generous, He was gracious, He was easy to get to know. He wasn't mean-spirited, He wasn't cruel, He wasn't harsh. He spoke the truth. He was honest. Sometimes the truth hurts. I want to share with you today then seven principles based on what I have come to understand about God through the New Testament. Now, I'm not going to give you every scriptural reference. You can read it yourself. You can come to the class and find out much more about it. But I want to give you, I've written them down this morning because I didn't want to forget any of them. I want to give you seven things that I believe are essential for your parenting. They're essential. Number one, you must provide a grace-rich environment for your children to grow up in. Now, I'm going to explain what I mean. You must provide a grace-rich environment, an environment that is filled with liberty, freedom, choices, the overlooking of mistakes. Grace-rich environment. You see, this is the bottom line, the most important thing you need to understand about God. He is a God of grace. He extends gracious favor to us when we don't deserve it. We must give up our exacting, rigid natures when it comes to being a parent. And we must extend grace to our kids. Liberty, freedom. You know, I don't know particularly what people think of me all the time. I can't read minds. I haven't acquired that ability yet, and I don't think I ever will. Sometimes I wished I could, but I can't. Other times, probably a real good thing I can't. Because of what some of you may be thinking right now. And I'd just leave the stage if I knew. But let me share this with you. We usually tend to have an image of a pastor that they're fairly, you know, you don't mess up around the pastor. And neither do their kids. They probably have to toe a pretty hard mark at that darling home, you know. They just have to toe the line. Well, really, quite to the contrary. Quite to the contrary. Some of you would probably be very amazed. If you were to come to our home, it's very freewheeling. It's very noisy. And it's a lot of fun. I'd say most of what we do at the Darling Homes have a good time living with each other. I decided a long time ago, if I can't enjoy parenting, why become one? I'm determined to let my kids know we love them. We love having you in our life. You're part of our life. This is a joy. It is not a pain. I do not consider parenting a pain. So I guess the first thing we better talk about is our attitude. I love being a parent. It's the most wonderful thing in my life. My marriage and my parenting is the most wonderful thing. It doesn't get any better than that. Fishing isn't better. Mountain biking isn't better. Being a pastor isn't better. Having a church isn't better. Money isn't better. The best thing in my life is being a dad and a husband. That's the best thing in my life. I enjoy it. Does it stress me at times? Well, sure it does. Sure it does. I have to deal with that. But it's the best thing in my life. Your kids can tell whether you like it or not. Don't ever think you can fool a child. They know whether you really enjoy being a parent or whether you don't. Like the comments they hear, "Oh, I don't think I can take another minute. I'm going to go crazy." They know. We're driving mom crazy. And if they hear that too often, they're not going to be around too often. And someday when you wish they would want to be around, they aren't going to want to be around. We've got to provide an environment in our homes that creates freedom for our children. Now, I could go into this for hours and hours, and I don't have that kind of time. Let me just say this. The greatest creativity, the greatest initiatives, the greatest discoveries have been made in this country because of an environment of freedom as compared to China and the Soviet Union. That is just a very large example of what freedom will do to a person's life. Most of you today in this congregation have some sort of a church background. You know why you're here today? You're here at Evergreen today because it is at Evergreen that you found a place that didn't talk about rules and regulations, but we talked about relationship and the richness and positiveness of God. That's why you're here. We created that environment. The staff created this environment through God's power because we understand that when people have liberty, they grow. When they understand they're free, when they understand they can make their own decisions, they're free. We also tell you the truth. There are certain things we're going to be accountable for. We have to know that so we understand the boundaries in which those decisions can make. So you must understand last week. And you must do it. But you must do it within the environment that I'm talking about today. The Bible tells us that the law came through Moses. Grace and truth came through Jesus Christ. And I'd like to ask you parents, are you more like Moses or are you more like Jesus? That's a very good question to ask yourself. Does grace flow from you, from your speech, from your actions? You'll understand this more specifically as I go on this morning. Number two, affirm each child's specialness. Each child is so special to God and they ought to be special to you. And you should let them know that. All of my children have different talents, different abilities. They do different things well. To be real honest, if you're not careful as a parent, it's real easy to favor one over another. Maybe you've got a child whose personality is a lot more like yours. Well, that's okay. You better learn how to accept the child whose personality isn't like yours and let them know that they're just as valuable as the person who's like you. For some of you, that may be very challenging, but you're going to have to do it. There's room, and my family reflects a multitude of gifts and variety of personalities and temperaments. I have a little son that's really the embodiment in some ways of my entire temperament, and it's a challenge. I understand a little bit more why my wife's been challenged being married to me. He's 3.5 with energy that goes even beyond me, and that's saying a lot. He has more energy than all three of my kids put together, the other three. He can go, 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 go. He'll climb a roof. He'll climb a tree. He's already been riding a bike just shortly after his third birthday. He was riding with no training wheels. Some of the kids didn't do that. They're 7 or 8. Then I look back and my mom telling me, Mark, you used to climb up in the garage when you were 2.5. You used to sit up there and I couldn't get you down. So I'd have to go get a neighbor to get you down. Now I understand what she meant. My little 3-year-old stood on the edge of a giant hole, decided, I think I'm going to jump in it. Jumped in it, broke his leg. That's the kind of stuff I would have done when I was a kid. I have other children that are more reserved. It's not necessarily that they have better character, because I don't think this is a character issue. It's a temperament thing. They have different temperament. I remember there was times with my other child, I'd be out going, darn, I wish he'd want to try to catch that football harder. This is so frustrating. He's reminding me of my little brothers. And I used to tease them. Man, they throw it that hard in the pros. You big baby, catch the ball. That's how I used to be as the oldest brother of 6. Doesn't work with your kids. I had to get rid of those habits with kids. But my little 3-year-old, he'll already go out for passes. And if it hits him in the mouth, he don't care. See? Now, it's really easy for me to go, that's the kind of guy that I want to have. Because that's the way Dad is. No pain, no gain. You see? But daughters aren't like that. You know? And my daughters go, oh, Dad, let me go out for a pass. And I'm thinking, oh, if this hits you in the nose, you're going to die. You're going to start crying on me. So I'll try, you know, I'll throw it, and it'll, sure enough, it'll hit him. And I don't go, see, now look, you're a girl, okay? Just get away from the football. Okay, no, you just try to help him and say, well, let's go try again. But when I was a kid, and I'll get into this more next week, how to break bad habits. If you don't know this, next week we'll end this series. Then you're going to be in trouble. I had terrible habits going into my early years as a parent that had to be broken, and I'll share with you next week primarily how they were. But I was a tease. I was a major tease, a merciless tease of my brothers and sisters. You can't be that way with your kids. And I've seen from time to time those same tendencies to want to do that to my kids, to try to motivate them. It doesn't motivate them. They need to know that you need to affirm and encourage your children that they're trying and give them liberty, but never put them down for the fact that they're trying, even if they don't try. I remember one time my oldest son, I was trying early on. Sometimes dads, you know, they get a little excited about having kids. So I bought them 20-inch bikes when they really needed 12-inch bikes. Okay. But I don't always judge right their height. So I was in a store one day, and they were on sale, a really good deal. They each had a scratch. They were matching, so I bought them both. Brought them home. Well, they couldn't even sit on them. You know what I mean? Their feet didn't even touch the pedals yet. But I thought maybe they'd be able to learn to ride them. So I got training wheels, put them on them, and I remember my son, I tried to get him on him. He just real hesitant. No, Dad, I don't want to. I don't want to. And I'd be thinking, try! Just try! I hate quitters! All I'm asking you to do is sit on the bike! That's my spirit. I didn't do that. You see, this is what's going on inside of me and what I used to do to my brothers and sisters. Major frustration, man. I do not like that attitude. And then finally, you know, I realized, you know what? One day my son will walk out to that bike, get on it, and he'll blow my mind and he'll ride it all by himself. The problem here is Dad wants him to do it now because Dad's really excited about it. Well, it don't matter what I want. What matters is my son and encouraging him. So he did. That's exactly what happened. One day he started getting on it. He'd want me to push him. Then one day he said, let's take the wheels off. You sure? You sure you want that? Yeah, let's try. So took them off. He'd fall down. I don't want to do it right now. And I'd be thinking the same thing again. You got to get back on the bike. We're on grass anyway. And, you know, I can't do that. I have to let him go at his pace. This isn't going to make or break the world. He's going to learn to ride a bike. What it mostly was about my pride. And so we have to learn to affirm our kids, to encourage them, to let them know they're doing well and we're proud of them. Some of us have a very difficult time expressing what we think, what we feel. Let me just share with you something I think will help you. The Bible says, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. Not as they do to you, but as you wished they would do unto you. Imagine you go to work tomorrow morning and your manager calls you into the office. Just put your name in this, say George or Sally. Come on into my office. I want to talk with you a bit this morning. So you go on in, fear and trepidation. You sit down, they close the door. Think, oh my gosh, when they close the door, probably going to lose my job. Says, you know, I've been wanting to tell you this for quite some time. You're probably one of the best employees we've ever hired here. And I wanted to let you know that this morning. I mean, you're here on time. I can always count on you. You're always pleasant. You have saved us so many problems by your creativity and your willingness to go the extra mile. I don't really know for sure how to show you our appreciation, but I thought maybe a 20% raise might help. Usually, you know, standard is about 5 to 10, but I just don't want you out looking for another job. I want you to know we want to keep you. So we're going to give you a 20% raise starting this week. Is that okay with you? Well, whatever you think, sir. It's okay with me. I'll tell you a secret. You wouldn't walk out of the office. You'd float out. You'd float. You have this big smile, silly grin on your face all day long. You know, the problem with that is that for most of us that never happens. Not because you don't deserve it. Most of you, if not all of you, do. You just don't get it. Our world doesn't work that way. That's no reason for your family not to work that way. That's no reason for you to bring that attitude home. You bring God's attitude home to your family. And you treat your kids the way you wished you were treated. You do with them the things you wished were done to you. And you'll change their environment. Encourage them. Learn the art of encouragement. Learn how to put hope in a little child. Learn how to put encouragement. How to put a smile back on their face. And I'll get into a few more of these in a moment. I'll tell you one thing here. Don't be hard to please. And I'll get into this in one of the next points I'm going to make to you. If you're hard to please, you'll destroy your child. Don't be hard to please. You ought to be easy to please. Just make the most of every little success, each little step of progress. Celebrate it. And they'll thrive. Believe in them. You've got to believe in your kids. When all the world around them fails, when their kids taunt them because of the new glasses they have to wear, when they get teased because of the braces, whatever it is, they should know when I come home, my mom and dad believe in me. They believe in me and they carry that little faith with them wherever they go in their day. No matter who puts them down, they know, my dad believes in me, my mom believes in me, and they stand behind me no matter what. What a tremendous comfort that is. I knew that all the time growing up, my parents. All the time. My mom and dad, I knew they'd die for me. They believed in me. And I'll share with you a story a little later to illustrate that. Number three, be warm and affectionate. Be warm and affectionate. Some of us have a very difficult time with this. Men, maybe particularly, some of us have a very difficult time being affectionate. We need to change that. Okay? Now, I'm going to teach you something this morning. I'm going to teach you how to hug. Okay? Now, you're not going to have to do it. I'm just going to show you, all right? It's because some of us have a very hard time with this. It's as if our motor skills weren't developed in this area. So what you do is you lift one arm like this, and you lift the other arm like this. You walk up to the person, and you put one arm around like this, one arm like this, and then usually you put your head to the left, because usually they'll go the other way, see? And you hold them. I could give you an hour today of research that has proven that people are healthier and they thrive with human touch. In fact, I read one recently in the Reader's Digest done in a hospital with a whole bunch of premature babies. All right, they were giving them the best care they could, but they decided to experiment on them as well. And you'll understand what I mean by that in a minute. They only had so many nurses on staff that all basically they could do, because there were so many premature babies on this floor, that they could just change them and feed them. That's all they really had time to do. But what they did was they asked a group of volunteers to come in with a certain set of babies. They found as many as they could get. To come in for 10 minutes on each child, they divided the children in half. And with each of these other child, they not only got food and clothing, but they were stroked on their back firmly by a woman, in this case, a nurse. Or a nursing volunteer. They would stroke them on the back of the head and they would talk to them. These babies put on weight and increased their health at 30 to 50% times the rate of these babies over here. All they got was changed and fed. No babies in this group died. They lost babies in this group. And this is a fact. This is the truth. I'm not making this up. Human touch is very important. Your children need to know they're not little lepers. They need to understand that they're touchable, that you affirm them. Some of us wives and husbands. I know my wife shared this with me not too long ago. She said, Mark, I grew up, I never saw my mom and dad kiss, ever. I guess they didn't think it was appropriate. I never saw them hug. And very rarely do I ever remember from my mom. My dad would, particularly when he put me to bed at night. He'd pick me up in his arms and swing me, and then he'd throw me in the bed. And then he'd come and hug me and tell me goodnight. Moms and dads, very important you start. It's not wrong to kiss in front of your kids. Nothing wrong with kissing. Maybe it's about time they see moms and dads kiss instead of all the garbage they see on TV. See? Maybe it's time they see a good example of a little passion in the home. Might not be a bad idea to show them that, hey, I'm excited about your mother, or I'm excited about your father. It's one of the biggest things you could do to change their impression of male-female relationships, is the way you interact with each other. And you need to carry that to your children. Dad, you need to hug your daughters. So important that you're affectionate with your daughters. I have talked to more young women that have grown up without the affection of the father, and they were starving for male attention, except they always get the wrong ones, and then they end up hating men. It's very important that you're affectionate in a righteous manner with your daughters. You're not afraid to hug them and kiss them. Same with your sons. I know a father recently was telling me, Mark, I've been applying these principles since I've been coming to Evergreen with my sons. He got three sons. And he said, it's changed our family. I hug them on a regular basis. I didn't grow up that way. He said, when I get around my mom and dad, they're amazed. They'll tell me, man, we didn't bring you up that way. You're doing a fantastic job. We see the impact on your family. So important to be affectionate to your children. Be warm. Express to them you love them. Tell them they're precious to you. Practice the words. Listen, if you have a hard time getting out of your mouth, go into your bedroom, go into your car and say, you're precious, precious, you're precious, you're special. I know some of you think that's really weird. But you've got to learn to get those things out of your mouth. They mean the world to your children. They don't mean the world to your wife. Guys, you want to turn your marriage on its end? You want to bring some excitement back in your marriage? Start using those terms with your wife. And you'll change your marriage. You'll change your family. It'll create an environment where I'll tell you what, my kids talk that way to each other. They talk that way to me and Kathy. We say please to them, they say please to us. We say thank you to them, they say thank you to us. We practice courtesy in our home. We tell them they're special. Now guess what? Dad, you're so special. You're the most specialist dad in the whole world. They pick that up from you, Mom and Dad. Number four, avoid foolish rules. Do not abuse your authority over foolish, arbitrary rules. Now you understand what I mean in just a moment. You need to overlook insignificant things that bug you. Avoid straining at gnats and swallowing camels. Don't be exacting and hard to please. Don't get all bent out of shape over insignificant things. Now, okay, what are insignificant things? What I tell you now is my opinion. You may have some of these rules, and I don't mean to be personally attacking you this morning, but I want to share with you the kind of environment that we have in our home, and you'll understand this. There are people who, for some reason, are very, very picky about food. I don't know why. They are. So, in our home, we don't have a rule about food. If you're hungry, go eat. Whatever's here, you can eat. If it's 10 o'clock and you want a candy bar, and there's a candy bar in the house, eat it. I don't care. Do you know why that's true? Because I will not impose the rules on my children that I will not obey to the letter myself. And I won't obey that rule. You see, if I want a snack, I can get in the car and go get one. They can't. I have a young person who is babysitting our children, and they came over one time. Actually, they've been coming over quite a while. But one day we got in this conversation. Mark, I got to ask you. You know, well, now they're married, so they were asking this now. When I used to come over to babysit, I used to get the willies at night before I put your kids to bed because they'd all go out and have a bowl of cereal or a sandwich or something. And, I mean, we just couldn't do that. We couldn't eat between any meals. And we never had any candy in our house. So, well, my mom did, but she'd hide it and sneak it. And we knew she had it, but she'd never give us any because she didn't want us to have eating disorders. And all of them grew up with eating disorders. And she said, but it's so different in your home. I said, well, sure it's different. God made food to be enjoyed, not legislated. He made it to be enjoyed. They can have whatever they want. And when it comes time for dinner, well, what about dinner if they're not hungry? I said, well, we all sit down because Mom worked hard over that meal. So all I do is I take a spoon, I put a little speck on their plate of each item. I know they can eat that. That's all. We don't have to prove to Mom that we loved her food by stuffing ourselves. She knows we appreciate it. We tell her that. But the refrigerator is no lock on there. If you want to get in there, get in there. If you want something to eat, if you're hungry, eat. Eat. That's one rule. Lights. Here's another rule. Lights left on. How many times we come home, moms and dads, every light in the place is on. The television is on. The ghetto blaster is on. The bathroom fan is running. The light's on. Someone forgot to shake the toilet handle and the water's running. So we gather the family together in the living room. I want to tell you something. You think money grows on trees? Don't you understand that the amplifier, the TV, the lights, the water, they all cost money? I can't do this without your cooperation. Well, you know the simplest solution is walk around the house and turn them off yourself. Walk around the house and turn them off. Be an example. Turn them off, but listen, life is more than lights being on and off. I've come home, there's freedom to leave the lights on. They get left on. Because you know something? I trust my children. I treat them as though they're very responsible, and they are. But you know what? They're just like me. In fact, they're different than me. They're still little. They got other things on their mind besides a stupid light. To them, it's insignificant. They don't think in the same terms that I think. So we can either get down on them. We can either make it, you know, here's another one. Clothes on the floor. Okay, you go to their bedroom, all right? Now, some of you are going to like this, some of you aren't. The kids here are going to all go home and go, well, Pastor Darling said, I can just see it now. So kids, that isn't fair. I'll talk to your parents for you, okay? But let me give you one. All I'm trying to do here is show you how you can help make kids be successful. My daughters are fairly meticulous with the room. They share a room, and my two boys share a room downstairs. And but one of the things with children, it's interesting about clothes, is when it's time for bed, and that's usually the time, they just take them off, they fall down on the floor, and they jump in their pajamas, and they're off to bed. You know, that they don't think, maybe if I fold the clothes, they'd last an extra day, they'd look a little nicer. That's not on their mind. Getting to bed's on their mind, and all the day's activities on their mind. So, a lot of us have a laundry chute, maybe. You got a laundry chute, everybody's supposed to drop it down. Or you got a laundry hamper in mom and dad's room or in the bathroom that you're supposed to bring your stuff to. And of course, the usual thing happens, it's time for school, and your daughter's favorite jeans, they're not ready to go. I'm appalled, mother. I cannot go to school in any other clothes but those. So we go into our lecture. Well, dear, if you learn a little responsibility, if you got the clothes in the hamper, when it was wash day, they would have been cleaned. But now they're not, so you're going to suffer. I hope the humiliation teaches you a lesson. I'll tell you something, I never deal with my children that way. Never have, never will. The other day, my daughter was going somewhere, and one of her favorite jeans, they were, you know, all wadded up, wrinkled, and they needed clean. So I said, honey, run upstairs quick. I'll put them in the washer for you. So put them in the washer. And then I heard them, got them in the dryer. Boom, mega heat setting, you know, to get that thing done. She had just touched her little life that her dad would go out of her way, out of his way, to do something for her. The other thing I did is I decided I'm going to get my daughters a little bucket, their own little bucket, colored bucket. And they can put it right by the dresser. So when the clothes fall down right there, the little bucket's right there. And they say, see, now all you got to do is pick it up, drop it in the bucket. Just drop it in there. Even if you didn't empty all the pockets, we'll check the pockets later, okay? Just try to hit the bucket. Even if you miss the bucket, at least you tried for the bucket. And so that's generally what they do, generally. Same with my son, generally. We don't have an exacting home. We have a home where people are allowed to fail, they're allowed to make mistakes, and we still believe the best about them. We still believe the best about them. We can have all kinds of rules. Maybe it's that another thing I did is I just taught my daughter how to go down and use the washer. Said, honey, I want you to know something. I've told all my children, everything in this house is yours. Everything. The washing machine, the iron, the blow dryer, whatever. What I got, it's yours. It's yours. If you want to use it, just go use it. And you don't know how to use it, ask me and I'll help you learn to use it. And so we empower them rather than say, fine, you want to have that kind of schedule with your clothes? Fine. Then you're going to wash your own clothes. That's ultimatum. That doesn't encourage anybody. All it does is sort of beat them down for the fact that they'd like to try something a little different. See? That they'd like to be maybe a little different than you. Maybe they don't have the same set of priorities you have. I try to help them succeed in what they are, in what they're doing. There's an awful lot I could say about that. You'll have to come to the class to get more. Number five, be authentic, honest, and humble with your children. Be authentic, real, and honest. You need to apologize to your kids for mistakes. And I can, being a parent, I can just tell you this, being a human being, there's not a one of us in this room doesn't go by that we probably wronged someone that's close to us. It might be a little word. It might be a reaction, some insensitivity. And I'll tell you what, on a regular basis, I either put my child on my lap or I kneel down eye level or I sit down on a chair and they're in front of me and explain to them the offense, say, I'm very sorry I acted that way to you. Would you forgive me? Would you forgive me? We're not perfect people. I'll tell you that right now. We're not perfect. But we can be humble. And your kids will respect you for that. And you know what else? It will help them come clean with their failures, with their problems. They'll know, my gosh, my father fesses up. I can talk to him. He talks to me. You need to be that way. We need to be real with our children. We need to be open. And you're going to have to learn the timing on this. That does take some discernment. But a few weeks ago, I was running an errand with my daughter, and I was having a really bad day. I had just gotten the mail, and it wasn't good mail. And it was pretty devastating mail, actually. And when I get caught emotionally, it gets really hard. Many times I can keep it from getting down into me. I can just deflect it, take it. But this day it got me, and when it gets me, it's like a giant punch to the stomach that knocks all the wind out of you. So we're driving down, and she says, "Dad, are you okay?" And my standard answer is, "I'm fine," which is a lie sometimes, see? But I do it anyway. I've done it. Today I thought, you know, I really need to let my children know that my life isn't a bowl of cherries just because I'm a pastor and I know the Lord. So I said, "Well, honey, no, to be honest, today is a day I'd really like to quit. I'd like to resign. I'd like nothing more than never show up at such and such a place again." And I said, "You know, I got something that really hurt me. I felt really hurt by that. Although there's times I get criticism, and it's very valid." And she said, "Boy, Dad, I know how you feel." And she reached over and took my hand, and, you know, that was really all it took. She encouraged me. And on we went with the day. We had a good day. But, you know, it's so foolish of us, men and women, to try and fake it all the time through life. To try to be, you know, like super people to our kids, and they grow up realizing it's impossible. But they don't know how to act now because of the model that we gave to them. Number 6, let them each contribute to the family. Show your kids you trust them. I'm going to give you some specific examples. One is with folding clothes. We don't fold any of the clothes in our home because all the kids do, all 4 of them. They get together every wash day, and after it's all washed, these huge piles, like 4 baskets full or however many baskets, and I have no idea how many loads of laundry. There's 6 of us in the family, so however many that comes to, it's a lot. They fold them all, from the littlest to the oldest. He's 3 and a half. They all get involved. When we first started, this has been, I don't know, maybe a couple years ago. I don't know that it's exactly when it did. I remember my wife was a little hesitant. She said, "Mark, I don't know if they're quite ready. You know, they're not going to do it exactly right." I said, "Listen, honey, it doesn't matter if it's exactly right. So if the towel's folded in a circle instead of a square." What's important is that the child was affirmed and they tried, and their trying is what it's all about. So if your underwear is twisted or it's inside out, it doesn't matter. If when you walk out of the shower and the towel's half damp because they didn't realize it wasn't dry and should have gone back in the dryer, and now you got to use a damp towel, which is a very pet peeve of mine. But I do it. I've learned to cope with it. Instead of making anything out of it, fine, just dry off with a damp towel. It'll work. And that affirms the child, and it gives them hope to do more. It gives them the courage to do more. It fills them with, you know, just so much encouragement. Another thing what my children do is I let them, I remember when they first wanted to try to rake the yard. So I bought rakes and I sawed them off so that they'd fit my little kid's hands. This is when they were about 3. Well, they'd goof off and then they'd rake and then they'd fall in the leaves. I didn't care. They were trying. And they'd rake, and they didn't always do it real good, but you know something about me? I never went back over what they did, myself, specifically. Because I didn't want to send them the message, "You didn't do a good enough job. Don't you understand that? Now I got to do it again." I've had the children, they vacuumed before, and it wasn't a very good job. I don't care. Am I going to go back over that and humiliate them for my pride? No, I don't. I simply teach them how, as they grow, to do it the best they can the first time. But I don't demand it. I let them know, your contribution is so valuable. You wouldn't believe the way our children contribute in our home. Now, there's other things they do, and I pay them, and I pay them well. I don't understand parents who give their kids a nickel for an hour's worth of work. That's very, I don't like that. I don't think you should like it either, moms and dads. You wouldn't do it for a nickel. Don't send that message to your kids. My daughter, my smallest daughter, she puts her little boy to bed every day. Now, you know, I pay her for that. At the end of the week, I pay her. She'll say, "Dad, I put him down this many times," and I pay her. My other daughter, she does the ironing. I pay her for that. My son, he does outdoor work, and he does inside work too. Different little jobs they have. And now, you know what? My daughter's got, she'll be 13 soon. She had some babysitting jobs. My son, he comes up to me the other day, "Dad, I want my own paper right now. I want to start working." They all got their own bank accounts. They're learning the value of money. But I didn't break them over the head with it. I didn't tell them, "You know, you've got to save. Put that money away." There's freedom to spend it or save it. It's your money. You work for it. Let them know they contribute to the success of the family. How many times my children, I take them shopping with me every week to the grocery store. And often, I usually take at least one, but sometimes I take them all. One of them pushes the cart, one of them reads the list, and the other one grabs the stuff off the shelf. And you know what? If they grab an extra candy bar or two, they hide it down under, or they just put it in. My kids don't ever hide it because they know they don't need to. If they got it, "Dad's a softy. Fine, we'll buy it." See? That's another beautiful thing. You see, they never have to hide anything because usually I'll say yes. I say yes to almost everything they ask me. Well, you know, husbands, it's just like us when we're out with a wife. You know, in your first marriage, she wants to keep the budget. So you see that extra ribeye? Maybe it's the extra beer. I don't know what it is. The chewing tobacco, you stuff it down underneath. The extra candy, you get to the end of the line. "Where did this come from?" "Oh, well, I thought we needed it, honey." "Well, it's too late now to put it back, usually." So you get it? Kids do the same thing. Sometimes we let them do the menus. Sometimes they pick out for a week what we're going to have. And then we go get what they say. Why not? They eat what we say all the time. I know this is blowing some of your minds. You'll just have to see the proof of it, I guess. Number seven. Listen to your kids. Spend time with them. Be their friends. Build a relationship with them. That takes time. Let me share something with you about children. Children never talk when you want to listen. Children want to talk when you're too busy to listen. So, what you're going to have to do is reprioritize the way you live your life. If you're on the phone to a girlfriend or a friend, you're going to have to go, "Excuse me, Barbara, could I call you back a little later?" and hang up the phone and pay attention to the child. You might be in the middle of dinner. I've always told my wife and encouraged her in this. Food is not more important around here than people. The most important thing in this family is people. So if one of the children comes in and they're hurt or they want a color or they want something or they need something, don't even worry. If you're cutting up carrots, stop the carrots. How many moms? "Can't you see I'm busy? Mommy's busy. I'm cutting up carrots." Leave! Why don't you just say it? Why don't we just tell the kid, "Get out of my face, you're bugging me, I don't have time for you." Because that's exactly what they know you're saying. We've got to learn that relationships are never convenient. Relationships always take sacrifice and time. And that shows your child in action that they're more important to you than the paper, then the World Series, then a game. The other night, my daughter, I was really rebuked the other night. My daughter, she's at the point, she wants to read to everybody. So usually, you know, she'll come up to me and say, "Dad, I want to read you a book." "Okay, honey, I'll sit down. I'll listen to her read to me." The other night, I was right in the middle of a very special news report. I don't usually watch the news. I wanted to see it. She came down beside me and she said, "Dad, I want to read you this book." I said, "Honey, I'm sorry. This is really important. I've got to catch this." I said, "Dad, I want to read you this book. Please, Dad." I said, "Sweetheart, listen, I'd love to listen. You know that..." I started reminding her of all my good qualities. "You know that you said I listen to you, but I got to catch this program." Tears welled up in her eyes, and she started to cry. And I'm sitting there reading the program. And then my son came and said, "There, read to Jeremy. He'll listen. Read to Jeremy." And afterwards I thought, I should have turned the program off. I really should have just turned it off. It meant something to my daughter then. It didn't mean anything 2 hours later. It meant it to her then. It wasn't that she had a bad little heart and she was coming in to try and interrupt Daddy. That wasn't it at all. She just simply got it on her mind. I'm going to go read to Dad. And Dad said, I don't got time. That's all that it said to her. It's very important that you understand with children that quality usually means quantity. I've heard so many parents that are telling me, well, and I'll tell you something, it's time to really start reprioritizing our lives. Some of us get so busy that by the time you get home from work and dinner is ready, it's 7:30, and I know many people are putting their kids to bed at 7:30 at night. You tell me how you're going to develop a relationship with a child when you're gone 10 to 12 hours a day, you come home, you see them for 1 hour, cook dinner, and they're in the bed. I don't know how. I'll tell you that right now. I do not have an answer for you other than this five-letter word, change. You better change now. You better reprioritize a little bit. You better think through what you're doing with your family because kids need your time. They need you. They need a relationship with you. Take them on trips with you. I was so encouraged. A father told me that. He said, Mark, he said, I'll tell you what I tried last week. He's a salesman. He said, I took my son out of school for the day and I took him on all my calls. I said, that is fantastic. I said, I'll never forget the week-long business trip my dad took me on when I was a young boy. We went to the motel. We swam in the pool at night. I went on all these big calls to Maytag and John Deere the next day. He introduced me like I was somebody special to all these guys who thought the world of my dad. And here was his son. Man, I felt so big. I felt so proud. We'd go out at night, and my dad would eat those sirloin steaks or those ribeyes that he'd tell me at the end of the week, I can't wait to get home to your mom's cooking. And I was thinking, why? This is awesome. And yet I know kids who've never, ever done anything with their father alone. This summer I went and did a conference in Ohio, and originally I was going to take my wife. It was going to kind of be like a mini honeymoon because they were paying me to come out and paying for the expenses of travel, so I went a few days early. And with what I made, I could cover that, so we were going to go on a little date. Well, she got sick. She hurt her neck really bad and couldn't go. First, I was really bummed. I really was. I'd really been planning this. It's the first time I was ever going to take her. She couldn't go, and I thought and thought and prayed about it. This place had a big water slide. It had this lake. It had these boats. And I thought, you know, I'm going to take my two oldest children. So I asked them. They were just elated. We spent the week together. We sat in the cabin together. We went and had pizza late at night together. They went on the water slide. We played on the water slide. At the end of the week when the conference started, I did 7 1-to-1.5-hour sessions. They came to every single one of them, sat in the front row, blew my mind. I did not expect that, nor did I ask that of them. And they felt so proud meeting all these people who think their dad's so neat, and they can, you know, they come up and talk to me, and I'd shown off my kids and introducing them. They'll never forget that. I like to take them with me wherever I can, whenever I go, on errands. Sometimes we just stay up till midnight at our house. Sometimes after celebration on Wednesday night, we just call out and order a pizza. And so this is celebrate God. Isn't it great to be a family? I'll tell you this. The day that I dread most in my life is the day my kids grow up and leave. I dread that day more than any other day. Not because of any insufficiency or this, you know, I need them for an ego trip. It's because it's so important to me. They matter so much to me. And I'm going to miss them. I hope your kids know you feel the same way. I hope they see it in the way you live. Because if they don't, you'll have missed the greatest joy in your life. It doesn't get any better than being a parent. It really doesn't. Let's pray. Lord, I thank you so much for my kids and for all the children I see come by me every single week at Evergreen. Their bright eyes, their smiling face. As far as they're concerned, they think the world is a happy, wonderful place. And I just pray, Lord, you'd help each person here today
with their kids, to love them while they still have the time, while their kids are still around, while their kids still want it. I pray, Lord, that you would help us to obey you. Help us to value and appreciate our children. Help us to affirm them. Help us to be gracious to them. Help us to extend favor to them. I just shudder, God, to think where I'd be today if you dealt with me like most of us deal with one another. Yet I'd be dead. I'd be dead from discouragement. I'd have given up a long time ago if you'd been harsh and demanding with me. Thank you that it's your kindness that leads us to change.